the title of Jeff Keller's best-selling book, website, newsletter, and company says it all. Attitude is everything. Jeff walked away from a thriving law career 17 years ago and dedicated himself to showing people how to create the kind of positive mindset, outlook, and environment that makes success virtually inevitable. Since then, he's empowered people across the country to take responsibility for their attitude and take control of their destiny. Along the way, he's attracted the attention and praise of some of the giants in the motivational field, including Zig Ziglar and the late, great Dr. Norman Vincent Peale. But most importantly, Jeff Keller really walks his talk, and I had a chance to personally witness that several years ago. Jeff developed a detached retina, which is a very serious problem. He underwent corrective surgery for the condition and was forced for an extended period of time to lay face down and immobilized. And you know what Jeff Keller was doing during that time? He was listening to personal development CDs the entire time that he was recuperating. I called Jeff several times during his healing process, and I was always amazed how up Jeff always was, even though during his recovery, he had some times that, quite frankly, weren't so good. But Jeff Keller really does know that attitude is everything. He doesn't just teach it. He lives it each and every day. Here's Jeff.
You know, I found that whenever you meet somebody that has what I would consider a breakthrough attitude, somebody who's willing to claim their power, I found that there's usually an interesting story behind that person when you meet them. I want to tell you about somebody I met about 2 weeks ago in Atlanta. I went to Atlanta on a speaking engagement. I was going to speak on Tuesday morning, fly in Monday night, and I get into the Atlanta airport. How many of you have been into the Atlanta airport? So it was one of those great times when you don't have to go to the luggage rack. You feel superior going by the other people who are picking up, schlepping all their stuff. So I'm zipping through. I got my little briefcase and the carry bag, and I'm heading for the ground transportation to try to get a taxi. And as I get out, it's a nice, comfortable 70-degree day, and the cab rolls up. Guy comes out. Now, maroon T-shirt and the biggest smile like he had just won the lottery. Grinning ear to ear. I mean, how many times do you see this with a cab driver? You know, usually, yeah. I mean, is the cab driver usually the one that lifts your day? The cab driver, at least maybe this is a Northeastern thing, but in New York, a lot of times it's no smile. There's no energy to the person. But this particular guy, boy, he had a smile on his face. And, of course, he takes the bags. You know, usually they pop the trunk and let you do your thing. This guy, oh, no, let me take your bags. And he's putting them. Now, I got off the plane. You know, your energy goes down a little bit. Now, all of a sudden, I'm feeling great again. So I am always very curious as to how people can get this smile on their face doing this. So I say to him, you know, you seem like such a happy guy. And he goes, oh, I am. I'm very, very, very happy. I said, you know, where are you from, if I may ask? He goes, well, I'm from Ethiopia. He said, I came here to Atlanta 17 years ago. And he said, this is a great country. What a great country. I said, tell me a little more about, you know, what happened and a little bit more about your life. He says, well, in Ethiopia, the conditions were very bad. He said, I had virtually no food to eat. There was a lot of unrest. You couldn't say what you wanted to say. And he said, it was a very down environment there. I also, he told me, spent a year in a refugee camp in Kenya. So he said, you know, things were not always this happy. But as he went into his story, he said, 10 years ago, I became a citizen of this country. And he was as proud as could be. And he was the smile just kept getting bigger and bigger on this man's face. And he said, I bought a house in the Atlanta area. Oh, it's just wonderful. And he said, I send money back home for my family all these years. So I've been able to help them. I got food whenever I want it. And he says, I work. He said, this is just fabulous. And, you know, I had to know more about him. I had to ask this question. I had to figure, he seemed like he worked pretty hard. I'm just curious. I said, when do you start work? He goes, I start pretty early. I said, what do you consider early? He goes, 3 a.m. I said, that's early. 3 a.m. I said, okay. Now, I'm figuring he's an industrious fellow. I know he doesn't stop at noon for lunch and call it a day. So I said, all right, when do you work until? how long do you go? He goes, pretty late. I said, well, what's pretty late? Usually he said around 9 p.m. So I'm doing the math now. He starts at 3 a.m. He works till 9 p.m. And he hasn't taken Chris's training, right? That's the biggest part of this. Imagine what he would do, Chris, if he started taking some of that cayenne pepper. This guy would be dangerous. This guy would be very dangerous. So I said, do you do that every day? He goes, oh, no. I take Sunday off. So let me get this straight. 6 days, you work 3 to 9. And he just smiled. He says, yep, life is great. He added one other thing. He said, I don't have much money in the bank. He says, I don't care. He says, I don't have much money in the bank. I don't have many possessions. He says, but I have everything. I have my freedom. I have food. I have a house. Life is just wonderful. Now, I don't know about you, but to me, this guy had achieved some amazing things. That's a breakthrough attitude. That's somebody who really appreciates and sees the positive in everything in his life. Compared to some other people, that may not be your idea of what phenomenal success is. Maybe you'd like some money in the bank and other things, and that's wonderful. But let's look at where he started. This, to me, was almost like a Bill Gates story in my mind. He started as someone who lived in a refugee camp, someone who had no work in Kenya, barely scrapping enough food to eat. And he gets over here, and through, as he said, discipline and hard work, because he kept telling me how much opportunity there is in this great country, he said, I've been able to become a citizen, to own a house. How many people in that refugee camp now own a house in the Atlanta suburbs? Not many, I bet. So that's why his achievements to me, when we speak about where someone starts in life and what they achieve, I put that guy, and I give him all the respect for what he has done. But it was a good lesson to me about just how far we can go and how, if he can be happy, and I don't mean just happy, I mean deliriously happy, driving his cab from 3 a.m. to 9 p.m., then it was a good example to me of the power of attitude and what a breakthrough attitude can do. As I was getting out of the cab after that ride, probably never to see this gentleman again, but he certainly had left an imprint on me, I hearkened back a little to my own life. And I started to think of where was it that I started to get a little bit of this breakthrough attitude, a little bit of change in my life. And I think for me, it came at a turning point in my life. I'm just curious, how many of you have had what you would consider a turning point in your life? You know, maybe it was a person that came in your life, and that was the turning point. Maybe it was when that person got out of your life, and that was the turning point. That seems to be the turning point for a lot of people when the person gets out of your life. But it's amazing how many of you have had that. I want to share with you very briefly a turning point I had in my life, because I think it will help you to understand exactly the context of where we're going today and how this might fit with you. You see, in 1980, I graduated from law school on Long Island from Hofstra, and I thought I'd be a lawyer for the rest of my life. In fact, I was certain I'd be a lawyer for the rest of my life. It wasn't even a question in my mind. See, I was one of these kids who never took the slightest risk in my life. When you say, you know, were you risk-taking and, you know, live your dreams, my dreams were like in a little tiny line that I was not going to cross no matter what. So if you told me to do anything that had the slightest bit of somebody rejecting me, I'm not even doing it. It's not even under consideration. That's how I came into this approaching it. So there I am. I get my piece of paper. I get the law degree, and I start out because here's the rest of my life. There's no way that can be anything else but that. And I found a few years into it, I really didn't enjoy being a lawyer. Right? I don't know if you ever dealt with lawyers. Maybe there's, again, I'm married to a lawyer, so I love lawyers. That's not that I have anything against lawyers, believe me. But a few years into it, I just, like Vic showed the picture with the guy with the anchors on him. I was going to work every day. I had the anchors. I'm dragging the chains and the, ever have a job like that? Boy, that brings you down. So I'm dragging my behind in every day. And I do this, and now I'm into it for about 5 years. And there were some things I liked, but you know what? A lot of it I did not like. It was just not part of my personality. I did a lot of litigation work. a lot of this adversarial things, a lot of it just clicked to me like, I understand why the system is what it is, but maybe I don't want to do that. That's how I came to it. So I'm 5 years into this. It's around 1985 now. I had just turned 30-ish right around that time. So before you start to wonder of the math, I'm 51 years old, right? I don't look it, right? I don't look a day over 50, right? But here's what happens. I'm sitting in my den, and, you know, I had gotten so down. I got depressed. I got discouraged to a degree I'd never had in my life. So I'm sitting there in my den, and I say, it's like 11 or 12 at night. I say, there's got to be more to my life than this. You know, like you've reached a point of, I just can't take it anymore. There's got to be more than this. And I immediately, that night, I started to see information about attitude and the power of the mind. Now, this was something that I had never really understood before. You could be relatively successful in this society. I did what they told me to do. Go to school, get the piece of paper. I know a lot of you, I see, respond to Zig Ziglar. A lot of you like Zig. I remember him saying, are you doing what you're doing on Tuesday because that's what you did on Monday? I said, how does the man know me? He never met me. That was me. And that was it. Robotic. Don't look to the sides. Just go through life. But you know what? Life sort of gives you a slap here and there when you try to work that way. Eventually, your spirit rebels against that because that's not the way you're meant to live. But there it is. I get exposed to these books, tapes, Attitude, Power of the Mind. I became like an addict for that stuff. I was reading and studying everything I could from that point onward till this day. To me, this was water in the desert. Water in the desert. I can't tell you that my life just was perfect overnight because it didn't happen that way. But I will say that my life changed significantly right away. See, even though I continued to be an attorney, I still, and believe me, my mother was not too good with all this. Believe me. When I started saying, well, you know, Mom, I'm not really going to be an attorney anymore. I'm going to do things about speaking and whatever. That was a tough thing for her. That was a tough thing to tell your mother that you're no longer going to be a lawyer. You're going to do motivational speaking. That just didn't resonate with her. But it was all out of love. She just didn't know that the other would ever, would it work out. So it's not that she was against anything. It was that I grew up in a very restricted frame of mind there. And that's where that was coming from. But these things opened up a whole new world to me. So I felt like after studying a lot of these things, and especially attitude, that this was really the key to changing your life. That as Vic had pointed out and Christopher pointed out, if your emotions and thoughts are not in the right place, and especially your attitude, then nothing else is going to work. Everything else short circuits. For me, this was a huge, huge thing in my life. And I just became someone who was going to study, read. And eventually, I got so excited about doing this that I started to write and read and speak to groups and do some adult education things. And I'm going to tell you that when I first did things like adult education things and seminars, I was just sweating bullets. I was ready to die. Because sometimes, you know, you say you want something, then life shows you the path to get it, but there's the overcoming of the fears and the things. And, you know, I can look back, I can laugh at that now. But at the time, it was a scary thing to do. Just say, I'm going to eventually give up being a lawyer. I'm going to do this other stuff. So I eventually phased my way out of the law business. So I did it as a hobby, this stuff, while I was still a lawyer for about 5 years. I didn't just go and join the circus. And then I started to do, as a full-time in the early 90s, to do writing and speaking. And then, you know what? When you will go out in that bold way, then other things in the universe start to come. I've had many blessings along the way. Blessings of meeting people like Vic Johnson. About 5 years ago, Vic calls me and says, you have a great book. I want to sell your book on my website. Things like that. Things that, you know, you could never plan. These things just come into play. And, you know, a lot of great stuff from there. But you see, this isn't a program today about me and my journey. It's really a program about you and your journey. I want to be here today to really support you and give you some of the tools for you to get going on your own breakthrough attitude, because it is only through the breakthrough attitude that you are going to claim the power that you have. And that's why we're here, is to do that. But I wanted to just let you understand where I'm coming from, just so you understand a little of the direction of my biases one way or the other. I don't think there's one way or one path to success. And I think each of you comes with a unique mission in life and talents that only you have. So the good news is that all of the things we're going to do today, all of the principles I'm going to discuss about attitude and also how to put that attitude into action. So I don't want to leave you hanging. See, I could build up your attitude, but there's going to be a point where you have to put the attitude into action. So you can't just be home smiling. You could, but then you got to go out. Then you have to drive the cab from 3 to 9 or do whatever you have to do. There has to be the action. I believe that each of you has to go it your own way, your own talents. There are things that you came here to do that nobody else can do. The world needs your talent. The world needs to see what you can do and what you can show us and what you can be. And that's why I say it's a very personalized thing, but I can guarantee you that the principles will work no matter what it is your goal is, whether it's to amass a fortune, get spiritual enlightenment, whatever it is, I still believe we're going to get there. And the most important thing we're going to do is get there through attitude. Now, this is an issue that can never be hammered enough, but we're going to first look at taking responsibility for your attitude. When I see attitude, I immediately hook into optimism. But when you see somebody that has an optimistic, good attitude, what are the traits do you find that that person has? Enthusiasm. Okay, enthusiasm.
Strong self-esteem.
Strong self-esteem. Excellent. Yes.
Perseverance.
Perseverance. Energy was one?
Yes.
Confidence. Absolutely.
Determination.
Willingness to see, open-minded willingness to learn certainly goes with attitude.
Resolve,
certainly.
Eagerness.
Attitude and gratitude certainly go together. Very, very important link. Really, an amazing collection of traits, wouldn't you say? I believe that without a positive attitude, you don't get to those other traits. You can't make use of those other characteristics. I also think courage is a big part of it. If I have a lousy attitude and I say, you know what, this isn't going to work out anyway, what am I going to do? Nothing. Or quit. Why would I be willing to do things that I don't think it's going to work out, right? Pack it in. Why would I persevere? Why would I have any confidence in my mission, my purpose? If my attitude stinks, I'm stopped in my tracks. And then you can't do any of those other things. Attitude, in my view, activates all of those other principles. One of the very, very crucial ones you mentioned, someone said energy. How many people with a lousy attitude have energy? How many people walk around saying, life stinks, but you say, boy, there's a dynamo. You know? Yeah. Doesn't happen. Energy is so crucial. Here's why I think energy is important. Energy is very persuasive. You ever find that? Energy is very, very persuasive. And if you don't believe that, I'm going to give you one word. Infomercials. You see, let's look at how you act at home. You're watching television, whether it's the ball game or some other sitcom or whatever is on that you want to watch. The commercial comes on and you start flipping. The channel surfing goes. Bleep, 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 bleep. You're going to each one. And then all of a sudden there's the infomercial. And what happens, right? You're watching the infomercial. Now, they're slicing, they're dicing, they're cutting, they're doing miraculous things. Now, you don't think at the beginning you have any need for this item whatsoever. Do you go buy it? No. You see, you're on the edge of your chair watching, right? And they're doing all these wonderful things that people have energy and they're excited about it. And then before you can, like, get back to reality, you're reaching for the credit card. And then eventually something pops and you say, do I really need scissors? How often do I have to cut through my leather shoes? You know? Do I really need something that will do that? And a lot of times, you know, your wallet goes back in and then you move on. Now, here's the point, though, which I began to learn from infomercials, is that it's the energy and enthusiasm with which it's presented that doesn't allow you to flip and get by it. You're going to listen to what they say. And what I found is when you have that type of energy, you become very persuasive. And this is in sales, this is in relationships. See, I found that when you have that attitude and energy, and I'm going to add sincerity too, because there's a point where you might cut off from the infomercial and not want to go forward with whatever that transaction is. When you have attitude, energy, and sincerity, people want to be around you. See, they want to listen to you. They want to buy from you. And it's not a question of trying to browbeat someone to your point of view. It's a question of them creating an environment where they want to. Not everyone will, but you will find that many will. So this is why attitude increases energy, which then allows you to be more persuasive, get more of what you want. I have to say a quick word, though, about energy. Everybody has their own personal style of energy. I am not a rah-rah, slap-you-on-the-back kind of guy. You've sized me up already, right? Right? You know that that's not me. If I started to do that, you'd say, he's a phony. That's not what he is. But I have an energy in my own way. So people would say I'm positive. You don't have to be screaming. You don't have to be loud. But you can't be sleepy and tired either. Because if you're sleepy and tired, you're not going to have much success in whatever you do. Because that energy is crucial. Again, some people have a more quiet energy. Go with that. But you'll find even that you will become a little more outgoing as you develop your attitude and your energy. But always look back to the traits that we've identified here, because that also is going to go a long way in convincing you, I hope, that it's attitude that will always activate those principles. Like you had mentioned with resolve and persistence, determination. So if you don't have that, you have nothing in your life. You need that. You know that. If you're negative, then you're never going to want to keep going on. Because something's going to happen. Why would I persist if I believe this doesn't work out? Same thing with the car. Why am I going to risk embarrassment? Let somebody laugh at me. Why am I going to do that if it's not going to work out? That's why the optimism, the attitude is so crucial. I think you attract opportunities from attitude and energy. How many of you saw the story about the autistic boy, the basketball story? Jason McElwain? Jason McElwain is a 17-year-old boy with autism. Now, he attended Greece Athena High School, which is in the Rochester area of upstate New York. He's a high-functioning autistic person, but he has a fourth-grade reading level as well, and didn't speak till he was five. He had tried out for the team as a player for junior varsity. He loves basketball, so he tries out as a player for junior varsity, and he doesn't make it. They gave him a shot, but he wasn't good enough to make the team. What they decided, though, was he wanted to be involved. So he said, I want to be the team manager for the varsity team. So he was duly appointed the team manager. Now, a team manager in a high school sport like that is a person who handles all of the equipment. He runs the clock, hands out the water bottles. I found one other thing that he said to be very interesting. He said, my job is to be enthusiastic and support the other players and encourage the other players. If you work in corporate America, there's a lot of people who wouldn't say their job description is to be enthusiastic. A lot would not say that. But here's a kid, and he says that's his job. Now, here's what happens. He has been so beloved by everyone. He is so enthused. He's so supportive of everyone that the coach tells him of the last game of the year. He said, you know what, Jason, I want you to suit up as a player for the last game. He says, I cannot promise you you will get in the game. He said, if the score is way out of line and our team is ahead, I'm going to put you in the game. So, you know, he understood the rules. First of all, people in the stands have his picture on little cards holding it, and they called him J-Mac, right? And they're screaming J-Mac with the placards and the signs and his face on the little signs. Because the guy was just loved by everyone. So what happens is 4 minutes left in the game. They're up by about 25 points. And somebody catches this on the home video. That's how the only reason they had it. Nobody else would have been there. So the coach says, get in the game. And the fans are screaming and the stands are rocking. And they're screaming J-Mac and he's number 52. And he comes in. Okay, now here's the Cinderella story as it unfolds. They give Jason the ball from 20-some-odd feet in the corner. He heaves it over the rim and hits nothing, over the other side of the basket. They give him another shot, a short layup right near the basket. He misses it. At this point, you know, the coach was interviewed later. He said, I started to think maybe I made a mistake, that maybe I was going to embarrass this young man by putting him in and it wouldn't work out. He said, so I was just hoping he'd score somehow. So now it's only about 3.5 minutes left in the game. Right? Jason goes on to hit 6 out of 10 three-point shots from more than 20 feet. He scores 20 points, right? He's the high scorer in the game playing 3.5 minutes. And at the buzzer, the final shot that he made, he heaves this like 25-foot shot that just goes swish through the net at the buzzer as the fans come onto the field and lift him on their shoulders. I don't care how macho you are. You're going to have tears if you ever saw this thing. And you should. If you have not seen it, go online. Jason McElwain, McElwain. If you probably just put in Jason McElwain video in any search engine, many news outlets and news sites still have it. So I would encourage you to watch that. I believe that if Jason McElwain did everything else that he had to do with his duties as the team manager, in other words, if he just threw out the balls and said, you know, go play and do this and whatever, I don't think he gets in that game. I don't think the coach feels I have to do something for this young man. I think that it was his attitude, it was his enthusiasm that made people want to do something for him. Why is the crowd screaming for him? It wasn't a scream of pity. It was something where he was so, and if you ask him, all he loves is basketball. Basketball, basketball. That's what he loves. The kid loves basketball. And he had his moment of destiny. And if you saw it, it's not like, you know, even if somebody were to let you shoot these shots, I'm not saying they were right on him at all times, but 25-foot shots, I mean, Michael Jordan couldn't hit 6 out of 10 of those kind of shots. But this guy does it. But my point is, this is a remarkable story on many levels. But I also tell it to you because when you are passionate about something, and he was passionate about basketball, when he had a situation where people gave him an opportunity that very few people would have gotten, and he, of course, made the best of it, but all because of good attitude, good energy, and enthusiasm. Speaking about attitude, you might also say, how much of the attitude can we really control? And if you see this story about Petra Nemkova, the supermodel. Petra Nemkova, she also had a very interesting life. She was born in 1979 in Czechoslovakia, when Czechoslovakia existed. Her family had very little money. Through great attitude and a lot of hard work to become a very, very renowned, famous supermodel. And eventually was on the cover of Sports Illustrated magazine in the swimsuit issue. So she did that. She was making phenomenal amounts of money, traveling the world, had met the man of her dreams, who was a photographer in England, named Simon. So she meets Simon, and as she tells it in her book, and the book is called Love Always Petra, P-E-T-R-A. And as she tells it, this guy was just the most wonderful thing that ever happened to her. So they decide they're going to take a vacation. And they take their vacation in Thailand in December of 2004. And while they're packing in the hotel room, they are suddenly thrust out of the room and into the tsunami, which hits at that exact moment. The boyfriend is swept away in the current. She has no idea if he's alive at this point. She is now out in this tsunami wave being cracked around and eventually clings to a palm tree for 8 hours to survive. And she has a cracked pelvis, excruciating pain after 8 hours. Some people from Thailand who were looking for whatever survivors there were come in and they rescue her. They take her off to the hospital. And she goes through the whole thing of, first of all, just how excruciating the pain was. She said, I had to keep my legs together because of your pelvis cracks. She had other bones broken in there. And massive internal injuries. But here's what happens. The doctor in Thailand speaks to her. She's saying, you know, I got to take this morphine over and over and over again because I can't take this pain. And this was a pretty tough lady. She's not a pushover to begin with. Can't you give me more morphine? You know, it's almost not working at this point. So the doctor says to Petra, and he was a wise man. He said, right now, on a scale of 1 to 10, you are rating the pain as a 10. You could just as easily say that it's a 4 out of 10. He said, you could just as easily, instead of dwelling on the pain, you could just as easily focus on something positive. And you would not have the same pain. What would you do? I don't know what I would do if I was in that spot. I'll tell you what she did. She was a smart lady. She said, from that moment on, I understood what he was saying. All I started to think of was nice moments that I had with my family. And she would call her family on the phone or whatever she could do. She said, I spent no more time begging for pain medication. And she said, after he spoke to me and I did what he said, she said, I never took another shot of morphine. The pain was a fraction of what it was. Now, how does this happen? Is this the amount of control that we have where some people can rate a pain 10 out of 10 and just by shifting their focus can now make it 4 out of 10? Do you believe that's possible? I do. I give her all the credit. I can't say what I would do in that situation. I don't think you could either. I should tell you that eventually the boyfriend died. He was swept. It was not found for months. But he was found. He died. If you see her now, she has a serenity and a peace that I would probably pay money for. What does this tell me? She says, you know, I have to make something positive out of this for both of us, for the boyfriend and for me. I had a wonderful time together. Yes, I was devastated and still am by what happened, but I can control this. I can look at this in a positive way. This is breakthrough attitude. That's the attitude that allows her. And you see, she still does her modeling. She has inspired many people with the book that she wrote about this. But that's what I want to say about attitude, is that it is the launching point of everything, and there's so much more control than what we think. I always ask myself, why are people so negative? What's the benefit of it? Here we have people, everybody is singing the praises of attitude. Attitude is everything, right? So I always say, attitude is everything. Why are people negative? Why do you think people would cling to being negative? Why might they do that? It's easier. Learn behavior also through time. Learn behavior, Bob, through habit. Mm-hmm. And just doing it right.
They don't have a desire to change.
They don't have a desire. It's right. They made a decision. Comfort zone.
You don't have to be responsible for
right. You don't have to be responsible for anything that happens. I think that's a lot of it. I really do. I think you've summed up the whole thing in a nutshell of why it is. I don't have to try this thing. Once you begin to be positive, see, then life's going to invite you to do something different. And it might scare the hell out of you. But you know what? If you'd been there, you know what? It wouldn't work out anyway. Then I don't have to try. It's easier in a way. Is it easier in the long run? No. But we think in the short run that it's easier. So that's why we do that. And I think you've hit that right on the head. Vic spent a lot on responsibility. I'm not going to spend much on that, except to say this. First of all, you can never say this enough. And I think you really embrace this in the morning. I can feel it in my bones how you embrace the importance of taking responsibility. Because the thing that I always harp on now, and again, my feelers are out because I had legal training. So I'm dangerous. I was a lawyer. So I look at everything through what's going on in that realm. And it's just incredible to me how people today do not take responsibility. And it's seeping in. You have to really be on guard for this. You see all of these lawsuits that are out there? I mean, you had the guy who had the gall to sue the fast food companies years ago. Do you remember this guy? Sues the fast food companies for giving him heart disease? He said, I remember this very well. He said, the fast food industry wrecked my life. For him to make a statement like that, I mean, it's not like the people that busted into his house, kicked the door down, you know, they held him down like with a plunger and, you know, we're putting him down there and here's the fries, you know, and the shakes. You know, it didn't happen that way. Maybe then I could say, okay, he has a point. But you see, he chose to go down there every day and eat that stuff. And, you know, his attorney said, they don't warn you sufficiently that this stuff is no good for you. When society gets to that point, I mean, every 10-year-old knows that chicken nuggets do not have the same nutritional value as broccoli. You know, a 10-year-old knows this. And then, you know, you see all these things. I remember all the people who lost money in the dot-com, right? What did they do, a lot of them? Sued. Who do we sue? And the brokers. Right. Let's sue the companies. Let's sue the brokers. As if they were guaranteed a result. got to take responsibility for that. There is something to be said for holding people responsible. And in certain product liability lawsuits, that's wonderful. But we've taken it way out of control here. Way out of control. So we covered this sufficiently, but I can't say enough. You have to be on guard when you see how society is trying to push the blame. And you know, well, what's next? I mean, you're going to sue the ice cream people? You're buying the stuff, whether it's cigarettes or that, or unhealthy food, right, Chris? I mean, it's the same thing. You got to take responsibility for that. But realize how that is. That really is something, I think, with young people, with everything, that is seeping in, because I get people all the time who say, you know what? I'm in sales, Jeff, blah, 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 blah. But you know what? You know why I'm having trouble? I don't have a college degree. You know, I didn't get that college degree. I'm saying Bill Gates, he doesn't get the college degree, and he seems to be scraping by these days. He seems to be doing all right. And Steve Jobs, what, didn't he drop out also? He was at Reed College. Or he didn't finish, to my knowledge. These guys are doing all right. I'm all for education. I'm not trying to be against education. But you can't use those types of excuses. That's something under attack now. And that's why I think it's so wonderful that we have that energy of emphasizing today that subject. I want to get into the next segment here, which has to do with watching your words. Watching your words. You have the attitude, the importance. Now, I hope I've sold you on that one, that without the optimism, without the attitude, it's like there's no fuel to go forward here. That is going to unleash all the other principles and let you get to where you want to go and get the breakthrough results. But let's look at it now. How do we build the attitude? One of the things I found that can either build it or destroy it is the words we use. You might say, Jeff, what's the big deal, the words I use? When you use the impossible, I can't do this, it's impossible, it's never going to work out. Same thing, what happens is you put your mind in negative mode, you shut down the whole thing. You're not even going to try when you use those words, the impossible, whatever. See, I like to think of it as dominoes. You begin to think something. If you believe I can do this, then you start to say that, and then you have a belief that you can do it. What will happen then? You'll take certain actions. You might get bounced around a little. You might have a lot of failures. But you're eventually going to keep... See, I'm optimistic, and I'm using positive words. It's like I'm honing in on it. I'm getting there. And you get there. Once you believe and use words of impossibility, can't, it's not for me, I got lousy luck, all that stuff, all goes downhill. Now, I like to think of myself as a positive guy, but, see, I do have my weakness. And my weakness is mechanical things. See, I don't know if you have this one, but my weakness is mechanical things. So, if you were to ask me to fix that, you know that toilet float, that you pick up the tank and you got the toilet float thing in there, that doohickey, you know that thing I mean? If you were to ask me to fix your toilet float, see, I'm not a mountain climber, but I have a far better chance of climbing Mount Everest than I would of fixing your toilet float. It's not even a joke. It's funny, but not a joke. See, but my ultimate Achilles heel is the instruction sheet. Ever pull one of those out? Ever go to IKEA and have to assemble something? Well, this one has figure 9, removing the door. See, once I see this three-dimensional stuff, it's almost like I get wobble. I lose all my power. You ever remember, like in the Superman movies, right? All of the things, when he had the bullets, would go bing, bing, bing. The bullets, he would just stick out his chest, right? And the crowbars, they'd hit him with crowbars. He'd just bend it like a pretzel. But there was one thing he could not defend against, right? Kryptonite. This stuff is like kryptonite to me. I open it up. I look. I get wobbly. I lose my power. It's all being sapped, right? I need Chris. I got no energy. And then I say, Dolores, to my wife, you got to come in here and help me. She picks up the piece of paper. She says, what's the big deal? You put this here, that there, and it's all done. For her, it's a piece of cake. It's not even a challenge. She said, it's all right on the piece of paper. You just follow what they tell you. And I said to myself, how did it come to this? How did I get to this point? I said, you know what? I am not a rocket scientist. I am not the smartest guy on earth, but this stuff is really should not be that tough. Like, I don't have some home repair gene that the rest of you, you know, were endowed with. See, I don't think that's it either. I think what happened here is that For the last 40 plus years, I've said, I can't fix things. And I'm no good at mechanical things. And if you wash that garbage through your mind for 40 plus years, you're, quote, not going to be able to do it. So it's only by reinforcing that over and over. Now, this is something where if I keep saying that, I can still have Dolores do something for me, or I can hire someone to do it. But you see, sometimes we allow that language to creep into the area where our dreams lie. And that's where it's devastating. That's where you have to be on guard for that. I read years ago about a gentleman named Kent Cullers, C-U-L-L-E-R-S. Now, here's another side of the coin. This guy, he has a doctorate in physics. Here's where he worked, on NASA's search for extraterrestrial intelligence. Now, here's what it is. This guy who received many awards, and he's a highly acclaimed guy in physics, he developed software that scans the galaxy for radio signals that would indicate the presence of other life forms out there. So he's trying to pick up with software the other ETs that are out there. And this is a very sophisticated type of research. So it goes into all of the awards he's gotten, but it mentions that he does have a physical challenge, Dr. Cullers. So here's how he himself described it. He said, it's a trivial affliction and just barely an inconvenience. Just barely an inconvenience. So you say, what's a guy got? You know, occasional asthma or pollen attack, you know, allergies. Kent Cullers is blind. But look at the words he, you see, the words that he is using expands his world. You see, if you were to say that blindness is a trivial affliction, see, what is it in your life? If you called it just barely, the worst problem you have right now, if you called it just barely an inconvenience, it takes on a whole new light. So I give that gentleman credit because he, as a blind person, does things that sighted people cannot do. All because of his attitude, his belief, and he uses words that expand that and create possibilities. You know, I heard Tommy Lee Jones once said, I'm optimistic because it creates possibilities. That was a very good way to put it. I'm optimistic because it creates possibilities. And pessimism, on the other hand, will destroy possibilities. That's why it's optimism, it's attitude, it's what allows the rest to unfold, the magic to unfold. Well, even with being very positive, some of you are going to say, Jeff, you know, it's nice to have motivational programs. We get to not be at work for a day. We get to be with positive people. Oh, what a day. But you know what? Certain things are impossible. And we really should be a little more careful about what we say is possible and impossible. Once you use that word, those words, it's impossible. You're just shutting off everything. And that's why I say, think in your life what you're saying is impossible. For you to grow your business, for you to have a relationship that would be the person of your dreams. To say it's impossible, you're just shutting down the whole thing. And then you'll make it impossible. We take out those negative words, it's going to make a huge difference. If you're going to go into the workplace, go and make appointments with people and tell them how sick you feel. Oh, you don't know, my back is killing me. Oh, I got this pain in my leg and my back. When you start, a lot of people, they drag around that ball and chain. I don't know why, maybe it's sympathy, whatever. It's just something that it immediately gets the energy down because it doesn't serve any purpose. If you're sick, see a doctor. I'm not saying to tough it out. Don't unload. Those kind of words just immediately deflate the other person. We're going to move on to strategy number 3. And it has to do with creating a positive environment. I would ask you this. What is your strategy for developing your attitude and for creating a positive environment? It's not like you're in school and they tell you, you've got to have a strategy for this. You've got to be disciplined in your mind and do certain things. Too many people are just doing what they did on Tuesday because that's what they did on Monday. And on Tuesday and Monday, they didn't have a strategy for this. There was no way to create a positive environment. Now, first of all, by coming here, you have shown your dedication to that principle. I give you a lot of credit for that. For showing up, taking a day out of your life to be here and to do something positive for yourself and learn some strategies that are going to help you. But the truth is, when you're really talking about creating a positive environment, it has to do with what you allow into your brain And that could be in the form of people you meet and material that you allow into your mind through words, through the newspapers, through TV. I don't know what your strategy is now for getting your news, if you're watching this, the 8 o'clock and the 10 o'clock and the 11 o'clock, so you can hear the rapes and murders three times. This is not a good thing. And it leads to your downfall, in my view. You're always going to be more successful by not doing that stuff. Can you be informed and spend a few minutes? Sure. But you know what? They always have, no matter what happens, they always have the runner on the bottom, so you're getting like double catastrophes. So you see the blaze and the terror, and then you can read about other terror and other murders on the bottom. This is lunacy. And it's not news, but you know what? Here's an important point. The media is not to blame. Who takes responsibility for this?
We do.
You turn it on, you buy or don't buy the products advertised, it's all up to you. And while it'd be nice if there was always positive news, it doesn't work that way. I know that this is a subject you're pretty well versed in, but sometimes we don't understand how, if something is always around our consciousness, it plays out in our life. You ever hear the silliest, dumbest song on the radio, right? And it's just going on, and it's the first time you heard it. You say to yourself, what, that's a dumb, stupid thing. And then the next day you're driving to work again, or you go on the subway, and there it is again. And now it starts to climb the charts. Now, 3 days later, you're in the shower. And what do you start to do as you get out? You're singing that song. Is this suddenly like Mozart or a musical masterpiece to you? No. It's as dumb as it ever was. But the thing is, it's gotten anything messages coming in, you're going to act on. You're going to start thinking about them. And if it's the same thing with negativity. You know, there's a song now, and I'm not going to... It's not a silly song, but you know the song. You hear the song, Bad Day? You have a bad day, blah, 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 blah. Now, the guy happens to be, it's clear to me the man is talented. But every time that thing comes on, I immediately get it off. Nice melody, yeah. I don't want to hear it. And you know what? Someone could say, you know, Jeff, but if you really look at the words, I also saw this on the internet. I was curious. What do people think of this song? Well, there's 16 different interpretations. He's talking about a relationship. It's not just about being negative. It's the concept and the words, bad day. So here I'm walking around, I'm having a bad day, a bad day, a bad... All I hear is bad day. So I hope he sells a million of whatever he's selling, but I don't want my brain hearing that. There's certain images and words that if you allow them in, it wreaks havoc on you. Now, how do we program the mind in a positive way? Yes, we all know that we can be around positive people. I think we have to take responsibility for that as well. Because too many people pay lip service. Oh, yeah, I know that this friend is killing me. But what do I do about it? Nothing. I keep being around that person. Now, you can call that cruel and heartless on my point. I'm not telling you what to do. I try to lift up anybody who wants to be helped. People say, you're a motivational speaker. If you see people on the subway and they're down, do you try to speak to them? I say, no, I get away from them. I run the other way. I'm not here to save the world. No. If I can help in any way with somebody who wants to be helped, well, then I consider that a great blessing. That's my mission. But if you don't want to be helped, or you want to tell me just why everything stinks, nothing could work out, how we're going all to hell, I don't need that. So I make the decision that I don't want to be around those people. If you give up smoking, or you start to then attract that energy of non-smoking, isn't that a fascinating concept? Nobody can show it to you on PowerPoint. Nobody can show you how when Vic gave up smoking, suddenly the stars realigned and the smokers drifted to this part and he went over here and then... You can't do that. It's a mystery of life. But as my good friend Jim Donovan always says, thoughts are things. Thoughts are things. And you just can't put that stuff out there without attracting like. Like attracts like. You want to have those thoughts that are in harmony. So, that being said, why are you here, most of you? Why are you positive? Because you have made a commitment to listen to things positive, to be with positive people. How many of you feel better today in this room this whole day than you generally feel at work? Right? If not, I want to work where you work. I want a job there. Because it's like a bubble we have here. It's a positive bubble. The question is, what will you do? What will be your strategy? And a lot of you have excellent strategies already. How could you take it to another level of having strategies that will continually reinforce the positive? of all the people I see, what changed their lives the most? Commitment to making it a habit daily, or as often as they could, of reading positive books, listening to those audio programs, and any other resources of a positive nature that they could. And those people who have a strategy for doing that live a whole different life than those who don't. Now, I'm going to add my own little twist over the last 5 years of my life. I think we also get to the positive by balancing two things. Positive inputs in, all the great products, things that we do, people that are positive, and we have some moments where we quiet the mind completely. Now, if I spoke 10 years ago, I would not have been saying these things. I think that both are the optimum. And what do I mean by that? I'm not telling you have to be like a monk for 3 hours and chant. I'm in the lotus position. I'm not telling you that. I'm saying your life might be a lot better if you did, but that's another issue. The issue here is, can you spend 5 minutes in quiet, in solitude? We all have 5 minutes. Try it sometime. And you're doing it with an effort to empty your mind of all thinking, which is a very difficult thing to do at the beginning. Try to stay 5 minutes without thinking of anything. I could put you in a room where it's dark and whatever. At the beginning, we call it monkey mind. The mind starts chattering, right? What does it usually chatter with? Whatever you've programmed it because of whatever your strategy has been, positive or negative. So you're going to get that chatter. So anything you can do that quiets the mind. You see, what you'll find is when you strip away all the noise and all the crap, at the core, you are peace and joy. You're positive. People who have learned, and it's not simple. Some people, their strategy is to meditate. Those people are able to get into a very positive place. In other words, once you have cleared the mind, it's like you have some connection back to your source or the universe. Then at that point where you are very still and quiet, that's a very positive place to be and a very regenerating place to be. Any yoga people in here? Isn't there a difference that you feel? If I could drag all of you in and you did it 3 times, you'd be hooked. But I'm saying that, you know why you're happy? I'm going to tell you why there's peace there. Because it is so unusual for us to be in the present moment. I used to live my life, I don't think I lived 5 seconds a day in the present moment before. It's that all of your angst is regret about the past and worry about the future. I don't care if you had the worst disease, you could be terminal. Wouldn't matter. But at this exact moment, you do not have a problem. If I used to say, let's just focus on this second, you say, well, I have this, I may lose a limb. No, that's not right this second. If you can bring your mind to this second, and again, there's millions of ways. Some people do it through martial arts, through judo, through aikido, other things like that. There's a million ways to do it. So I don't suggest any one way. But I will say this. When you find that balance, the balance of positive inputs, books, tapes, people, get rid of the negative crap that you're letting in there through the media, that's on one side, and find some way to get into that present moment and quiet your mind, because the balancing of those two positive forces that you're going to find the major power. If you want to create a positive environment, positive life, positive attitude, you must somehow connect with what you are passionate about. Someone's going to say, Jeff, I can't quit my job. I got a mortgage. I got 3 kids. Blah, 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 blah. No, that's not what I mean. I'm not saying you have to quit your job. If there's something that you love to do, find a way to spend some amount of time doing it. Then miracles open up in your life. Because when you are willing to do that, people who get involved in their passion, those are the people that are going to lead a life which is so far beyond what it would be if they didn't. Most people are finding excuses. Here's why I can't do it. I can't do it because I don't have the money. I'll say, what do you want to do? People say, well, I want to sing. Well, could you sing on the weekends or at night in certain clubs near you? Well, I could, but I'd have to take lessons. It's true that they might have to do that, but what's stopping that? There's always time to do it. I remember, you know the writer David Baldacci? Absolute Power with Clint Eastwood, right? Clint Eastwood was in the movie. He was a lawyer, another unhappy lawyer. Now, he could have said, you know what? He had kids. He had a lot going on. He started to write between 10 and 2 a.m. He probably should have met the cab driver I met from Ethiopia. And he did this for 5 to 10 years, earning zero, just to learn the craft of writing novels. He did what he found a way to do it. He's a multimillionaire now with books that are, flying off the shelves. He names his own ticket now. What you're passionate about. You came here to do something. It could be a money-making thing. It could be a service to humanity thing. I don't know what your thing is. But if you say, I like to write, I like to garden, I like to collect Star Trek things, I don't know what it is you like. You have to, in my view, allow yourself to do that. Very, very, very crucial. Years ago, I was listening to programs by Dr. Nathaniel Brandon, who does a lot on self-esteem. Excellent stuff. But here's what I want you to do, to tune in a little bit to what may be blocking you. The sentence completion exercises work like this. You read a sentence. Like here it says, if I was serious about living my dream, I would. What you then do is you write down the first thing that comes in your mind. If you said, eat pastrami, you write down eat pastrami. If you said, call my mother, you write. And each time you say it to yourself again, if I was serious about living my dream, I would, number one. If I was serious, and you keep repeating it and write the first 7 or 8 things that come to your mind. So you got the rules. It's uncensored, and you just say, if I was serious about living my dream, I would, and you rattle off, as you read it each time, whatever the first thing comes to your mind. A lot of times what happens in these exercises is that it takes a while to strip the layers away. The first two things sound silly, and you're getting there, but the layers are coming off. Sometimes in the 3, 4, 5, and 6, you're going to find that's the real roadblock for you. That's the stumbling block for you. So I hope you got something from that. One of the best ways I have found to start every day, people would tell me at seminars, you know what, focus on gratitude and you should always be writing down ways that you're grateful. And everybody goes, oh yeah, that's a great idea, you know. And I would say that less than 1% does it. But you know what, I made the commitment. I always have gratitude at the forefront, but I just knew I could take it to another level. If I could just focus it even more, I knew I could do it. So you write down every day what it is you're grateful for. So I always start with either, I am grateful for, I appreciate. Almost every line says, I am grateful for, I appreciate, I am blessed because. And at the beginning, you could use general things, whether it be your health, whether it be other blessings in your life. It can be business-related things. So, you know, I made 12 calls today. I'm grateful that I had the courage to do it. There's no rules. You're just spewing forth positive things. I'm saying, start this one today when you get home. I would strongly urge you to do that. Strategy number 4, which is the last one, it's the core of a lot of why attitude doesn't move into action. And that has to do with confronting your fears. This is the granddaddy or grandmommy of them all. 99% of the reason that you're not living the life of your dreams is because you're afraid to do the things that would be necessary. A lot of people say they want to do public speaking. So I thought, you know, I want to do public speaking because I'm on fire about attitude, motivation, and letting people live their lives. I'm on fire about it, you know. I'm ready to go. Until early in my career, they asked me to do a program for a government agency of our U.S. government. It was in Absecon, New Jersey. You all know Absecon, New Jersey? They said, we want you to do a 2-hour program. I said, what's the topic? You want me to speak about attitude? Yes, but we really want you to speak about change. Now, government workers and change. I'm not really a cocky type, though, but I was ready to prepare. They said 2 hours, so I show up. And I gave the program, and I will tell you that I could see right off the bat that this was not going swimmingly, as the British might say. I was sweating bullets. I knew that half of them, if they had weapons, they would have attacked. I knew there was a problem here. So I survived the program. It's 2 hours. It felt like 2 years. But I knew a couple of things. I wasn't going to let these people who didn't like it destroy my dream. I knew that I had to be uncomfortable, that that was the way to get to what I wanted. And it's the way where you're going to get to what you want. I heard a speaker years ago say, if you want to be highly successful, you must be willing to be uncomfortable. That's just the way it is. You have to be willing to be uncomfortable. Is there a way around that? As I've seen in 20 years of studying, no. You have to find another planet. You have to walk through the things that you're uncomfortable doing. And what happens then when you do that? You feel better even if you do a lousy job of whatever you're doing. So I look at it this way. I look at it as, if I do the thing I'm afraid to do, I consider myself a winner, regardless of the result. You can laugh at me. You can say, I thought he stunk today. You know, Chris is a great speaker. Vic's a great speaker. This guy, oh boy. You know, it doesn't matter. I came up here and gave you everything I had. Everything I had. Heart and soul. I gave you everything I had. Could someone do it better? Yes. Could I improve? Yes. But at that time, I did the best I could. I gave it the best I could. And that's the only way you get your own self-respect. That's the way you move forward. That's the way you build that big word eventually with the A, attitude, because you feel like you're in the game. And that's going to be unleashing it. What I would like you to do, just for 2 seconds, when I talk about things that may be outside your comfort zone, what is the one thing you know that you need to do more of to be more successful in your life? As I was talking now about comfort zones, doing things that make you feel uncomfortable, advancing by doing that, what is the thing, if it's public speaking, write down public speaking. If it's making cold calls and you need that in your business, write that down. What is that X that's outside the circle that you're not doing? And when you go home, you'll be able to see what it is you need to do to get to the next level. That's going to make all the difference to you. Made it to me. And you know what? I don't have it all figured out yet either. But I do know this. You've got to be willing to do that, to get to the maximum that you can get to. You can't do that by saying, I'll stay on the sideline. It just will not work. I want to thank all of you, really, for the way that you participated here, for all the positive energy you showed, for all the honesty you showed. I said certain things here. I believe they were taken in a very open way, with an open heart and an open mind. You could see how this stuff changed my life. But it really comes down to developing your attitude. That is the launching point for all of this. It's that breakthrough attitude. We've discussed how people like Jason McElwain, with his enthusiasm and his attitude, accomplished the impossible, scoring 20 points in 3.5 minutes when he never even played in a game before. And, you know, we've discussed people like Petra Nemkova, who overcame the pain and just by the power of a mind. Really, all of this stuff is common sense, but it's the rare individual who applies these strategies, or even has a strategy, and applies it with discipline on a regular basis. So I want to challenge you to be one of those people. You have tremendous gifts, that I know, each and every one of you, waiting to be developed. And it starts with a breakthrough attitude. When you have that breakthrough attitude, and that's the most important investment I think you're ever going to make, whether you want success in any realm, developing your attitude. It starts with your attitude, but I'll tell you where it leads. It leads to you creating a magical life filled with joy, meaning, and incredible success. I wish you many blessings. Thank you.